Okay, so we'd like to welcome everyone to our Elder Scrolls Oblivion interview. Joining us today, joining Todd and I, it's Pete Hines, VP of Marketing and PR for Bethesda Software. And Pete, are you there?
I am here. Hi, guys.
Good. This is working, too. We had some problems connecting earlier, but everything seems fine now. So, first thing, thanks a lot, Pete, for doing the interview.
Sure.
This is our first interview with the Neocast. We're part of PowerUser.tv, which is a big podcasting site now.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to get you on the show to talk about Elder Scrolls Oblivion,
okay,
which is your big upcoming title.
So I hear.
So first off, we wanted to know a little bit about you. Who are you? What do you do? What's your job at Bethesda?
I am the VP of PR and marketing, as you said, and my jobs depend on the day and the hour. I do everything from writing press releases or putting together information or talking to the press about the game and securing coverage to answering interviews. I write the manual. I'm editing the strategy guide. I do a little bit of everything. So we're a smaller shop, so everybody sort of pitches in wherever, so I guess I'm sort of the best known for being the guy who's always out there talking about the game, because everybody else is too busy trying to finish it.
So you're the jack of all trades, so to speak.
I am a jack of all trades, yeah. Yes.
Good. So so first off, Pete, just if you could talk a little bit about the game in general, Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Who's involved in terms of companies? What platforms are we looking at? The genre of the game, some of the storyline. So just if you'd ramble for a bit on the game in general.
Sure. Game is developed by Bethesda Game Studios, which is how we refer to our internal development here at Bethesda Softworks. It's being published by Bethesda Softworks and 2K Games jointly worldwide. And the game is the fourth chapter in our Elder Scrolls series, which has been around a little over 10 years. And it is a big, huge role-playing game. We basically just create these big virtual fantasy worlds where you can go in and create whatever kind of character you want and do whatever you want. We don't really define your gameplay experience too tightly for you. We allow you to play the main quest or go off and explore the world on your own and basically create your own path through this world and interact with folks and do the sort of things that are fun for you, whether that's alchemy or spell casting or combat and dungeon crawling, whatever floats your boat, you can do it in our game.
So if you had to describe the game as something, though, it would be a first-person RTS, I guess, or RPG?
Yeah, first-person RPG. Folks take to it because of the graphics, because of the first person. It's a control and a perspective that they're used to from, whether it be Halo or Half-Life or whatever. You know, they're used to first-person controls, first-person perspective, and they come for the graphics, but they stay for the gameplay. I think once folks get the game and they start to realize all the things that we let them do in this game that most games don't let them do in terms of going wherever they want and doing whatever they want. I think that's been a big hallmark for us and why the game has done so well and resonated with folks.
Right, and it's going to be released for PC and Xbox 360.
Correct, PC and Xbox 360 early this year.
Good stuff. And a little bit about the storyline. Does it relate back to any of the older games?
It doesn't, actually. All of our games, we like to stand on their own. So we don't want you to have played any of the previous games in order to experience and play the new one. The storyline is about the Emperor, who you meet early in the game, who is being chased by assassins. And the assassins have killed his sons, and they take out the Emperor, and he, in his dying words, entrusts you with finding his lost son. And the Emperor in our game sort of serves as a keystone. Like he's the living barrier between the world of Tamriel, which is where the game takes place, and
right,
Oblivion, which is the equivalent of hell, where all the demons live. And so when he dies and he's not on the throne and none of his heirs sit on the throne, then that barrier is removed and the demons start invading the world. And you have to find this this lost illegitimate son of his from years ago and find him and try and get him back on the throne to close these barriers so that the demons will stop invading.
Now, before we get any further, I do have something quick to ask.
Okay.
Now, of course, Morrowind, in my opinion and many other opinions, I'm sure, around the net, pretty much defined the first-person role-playing game genre back in, what was it, 2001 it was released, I believe?
2002,
right. Now, Morrowind was huge. It was a big game. It was very popular back then, still is. Can you tell us now, for Elder Scrolls Oblivion, the voice talent involved in this game? You have some pretty big names involved, don't you?
Yeah, so one of the things that the devs decided early on was that we wanted to get some names, not really just for the name power, but to really bring a bigger presence to some of the key roles in the story. So the first person, the first big important person you meet in the game is the Emperor, who is voiced by Patrick Stewart. So that really sort of gets things off and running in a hurry. He did just a fantastic job. He really brings a great presence to that role, even though he doesn't stick around very long before he gets whacked. The son of the Emperor that you have to find is voiced by Sean Bean, who is really just, the more I play the game and sort of experience the main quest, which is something I actually only dabble in. I end up doing a lot of other various and sundry things, but he just brings such a great voice to that role and really brings that character to life. And then sort of the bad guy or the nemesis in all of this is voiced by Terrence Stamp, who does a great job of being the sort of thoughtful yet evil nemesis that you're trying to, trying to hold back as he attempts to basically overthrow the world. And then Linda Carter, who provided her voice for Morrowind, is also back again in Oblivion, providing her voice for the Nord females in the game, which is one of the 10 races we have in the game.
That's really neat.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah,
I just thought that was an important part that we should add.
Yeah, it's definitely fun, and it's particularly when you interact with the son of the Emperor, who you see quite a bit during the main quest. You really sort of feel like that you're talking to this really heroic sort of this almost unwilling hero. Not that he doesn't want to be a hero, but that's, he doesn't know who he is until you tell him. So I think Sean did just a fantastic job of bringing that character to life in a way probably that nobody else could have.
Right.
Yeah, that's really good. We understand too that Elder Scrolls was delayed by 3 months. What did those 3 months allow you to accomplish that wouldn't have been in the game otherwise? And how's the game development proceeding so far?
I mean, the delay of the game was because we weren't done, pure and simple. We had more stuff that we needed to spend time on in terms of optimization and tweaking and getting the bugs out of the game and making it the polished product that we felt like it deserved to be after all the years that we had been working on it. So the delay was entirely due to the fact that we weren't done on the game, and what it's allowed us to do is to provide a level of polish and finish to the product that it deserves. Last thing in the world we want to do is work on this game for all of these years and put, basically the lives of everybody here for the last 3.5 to 4 years and waste it because a product wasn't ready for prime time. So we sort of went against the pressure to have the game out for the launch of the 360 and to have it out for the holidays and took the time necessary to finish the game. So it was not an easy decision.
Yeah. Hypothetically, if you're given another 3 months, would there be anything you would improve on specifically, or is the game pretty well polished off and you guys are happy with it?
No, I mean, I definitely think we're getting to the point now, and we're definitely in sort of the short strokes where we're really close at this stage. But if you add more time, would we add anything? Not really, because the last few months of the product, you're not really adding anything. You're really just trying to get the bugs out. You try to add features and things in the product at this late stage, and you're really asking for trouble. So at this stage, we're really just focusing on making sure it works in every conceivable circumstance. We don't have a linear game where we always know where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing. So it takes an incredible amount of testing and long hours by a lot of people to make sure we get every last bug out. So yeah, 3 more months isn't like, oh, hey, we would love to do all of these other features. It's not that at all. It's and just spending the time necessary to test it. And once it gets to the point where it works like it's supposed to, then we say, okay, that's it, we're done.
Todd is going to ask you now about the graphics and the visual features of Elder Scrolls.
Sure.
We've got a few questions lined up for you there. So, Todd?
Alrighty. What are the current system requirements, both minimum and recommended, for the PC version of Oblivion?
I mean, if you want the game to look and play as good as they can possibly look, then you're going to want the latest and greatest stuff out there. So you're going to want, you know, a high-end PC that you would have got in the last few months. You're going to want one of the latest or greatest video cards from ATI or NVIDIA, you know, 1800, 1900 series, or you know, the 6800 series from, or 7800 series from NVIDIA. You know, the more RAM, the higher your processor, the better that your game is going to run. And basically what it allows you to do is not turn down a lot of the sliders and options. Basically, that's what you're doing. The lower the spec on your machine, and you can go to elderscrolls.com and see where we've posted all the system requirements. And people are always like, oh, well, how will the game play on this card or with this much RAM? You know, we can't get into specifying for you exactly how it's going to work. What it ends up being is you play the game and figure out, hey, you know, the game is playing a little slow because I've got my draw distance all the way out. So you pull your draw distance in a little bit and your frame rate is at 30 frames a second and you're happy. So it's going to be different on everybody's machine based on all the different variables in terms of RAM and processor and video card. But video card is definitely a biggie. We are super graphic intensive with all of our shaders and stuff. So you really want to, if you really want the game to look unbelievable, you definitely want to get one of the new video cards.
Just as a follow-up to that too, Pete, I know there's been a lot of talk recently about dual cores and how games of the future will be optimized for more than one physical processor.
Right.
Is Elder Scrolls going to take advantage specifically of dual-core chips like the X2 and the new
GeForce? There are a few things that we do that take advantage of it. I don't know if you would, if you played it on a standard versus a dual core, if you would notice a tremendous difference. Again, we're not as intensive processor-wise as we are graphics processor-wise.
Right, it's a video subsystem.
That's big time. Yeah. So the things that really kill our game, if you're on a min-spec machine or if you turn on every shadow option and max out every slider, that's what's going to kill your frame rate. So it's a lot of it is on the GPU side and sort of scaling those to your card. And again, having the best video card means you don't really have to scale it back. I spent some time last week with it on a 1900, ATI 1900, and it just looks, I mean, it is the bomb. It is unbelievable. And you have to, you turn nothing down. It's just amazing. And again, I've been looking at this game for years, so
years, yeah.
Be jaded, but it still is just jaw-dropping when you see, you know, go to places you've never seen before. It's amazing.
Well, from the screenshots and some of the movies that I've seen, I mean, the first time you walk out into the forest and there's butterflies and deer and the clouds, I assume, are 3D also, and it's just like amazing looking, you know.
Yeah, and it's honestly one of those things that, like, if you think it looks good in the screens and the movies, everybody always says this, but it's really nothing compared to seeing it running live.
Right.
There's nothing like,
can't compare,
you know, just being able to look around and you know, look up at the clouds and sort of do whatever you want, and it's like it doesn't change. You know, it's one of those things like you swear if you turn your head really quick, it's all gonna disappear like a mirage. But just being able to walk through the forest and be like, oh my god, look at this, and that's really where you kind of get how next gen the game is. So, and again, that's my job. I'm supposed to be telling you that, but I think once the game comes out and people experience it for themselves, I don't think there's going to be many folks disagreeing that it's pretty amazing what the guys have done.
Well, just in general, not necessarily comparing a 360 version to the PC version, there were rumors that the shadowing, I believe, or the lighting for the game was toned down recently, so that the PC version would match the visual quality of the X360 version.
No.
That's not true, correct?
That's not true. So what we did, this all started because we had to do a different shadowing system than the one we had originally intended because it was too expensive. And it was too expensive on anything. It wasn't just too expensive here or there. It just didn't work right. And the only place we had ever actually shown it was in the very first cell of the E3 demo, where If you've watched those videos that we released, Todd picks up a rib cage and shows off some of the lighting on the individual objects and stuff. That's actually the only place we've ever shown anybody the game looking like that. So the rest of the stuff that you've ever seen has basically been with that system either turned off or completely out and with the new system in. So the issue was individual shadows for every single object in the game, and it was so ridiculously expensive that we just the game wouldn't run with it looking like that. So we came up with a system that actually worked as opposed to trying to shoehorn something in that didn't work. So there's been a lot of discussion about that, but it's really sort of people, oh, it looks so much better with the old system, but nobody's ever played the game with that system in, and you only saw that one little prison cell with it working like that. So it's one of those things that got blown way out of proportion just because people didn't quite sort of get what had changed and what was different. And that was, and again, we don't make decisions based on this platform or that platform. It is, what are we going to do in the game? This is the game. What's the best decision for the game? And so we changed the way we did shadows in the best interest of the game.
Well, that certainly makes sense. So yeah. In other words, the shadowing system that you originally showed in that one portion of the original E3 video, you'd need like an IBM supercomputer to run, pretty much.
Yeah, it's not something
it wasn't
that was
feasible to you guys.
It wasn't feasible or practical. It didn't work. I mean, you know, you try stuff in a game and some things work and some things don't. We did three different combat systems before we settled on the one we've got. So, you know, game development is about trying something, seeing if it works, and if it doesn't work, you know, you can either be stupid and bullheaded and try and push forward with a bad idea, or you could say, okay, that didn't work, let's try something else. So we tried it, it didn't work, we tried something else, and it works much better. So I think now, in the end of the day, it's people play this game and they're not even going to notice. It's one of those things that, again, people think it's important, but they didn't even realize it wasn't in the rest of the E3 demo or anywhere else. So,
now, along that same question line, can you discuss the current in-game high dynamic range lighting implementation and how it actually relates to dynamic shadows, and what is the shader level required to run the game and the HDR?
Well, the shaders are card-specific, so again, you know, you'd have to refer to our full list of all of the cards supported. If you've got a card that supports 3.0 shaders, then you'll get all the 3.0 shader effects. There are cards that will run the game that do not support 3.0 shaders, and so you get something less than, you know, you don't get those specific shaders in your version of the game, which is sort of to my point, if you want to get it to look as good as possible, you've got to get the latest and greatest video card. We do use HDR in a number of different ways. You can actually sort of tweak how much of it you get or don't get or use or don't use in your setup options on the PC. It's a default thing on the Xbox 360. But yeah, I mean, there's no crazy pixel shader effect or graphical buzzword being thrown around out there that we don't use in some way, shape, and form. And as it relates to shadows and stuff, we just don't do dynamic shadows for all of the objects. That's not to say that there aren't still light and dark places in the world. It's just all in how it's done and calculated. And so, it's one of those things you got to play and experience, and then you'll just say, oh, that looks exactly like it should.
Right. And I remembered my question, Pete. It sort of ties in with this whole HDR idea. The engine that you guys are using for the game, is it loosely based on anything, or is it a completely new engine, sort of like what we saw with Crytek and Far Cry?
We do a mishmash of stuff. So we use Gamebryo for our rendering engine, but we use a heavily modified version of it.
Right.
We make a lot of customizations to it ourselves. We use Havok for our physics. Some of SpeedTree to do the creation of the different trees in the world, but that's a good example. So we don't use full SpeedTree. We use SpeedTree for the creation of the different individual trees you see, but then we do all the rendering stuff on the trees ourselves. So we use different middleware packages and solutions where it makes sense, but then we always end up customizing it and modifying it for our needs because, you know, we do these big, huge worlds where, you know, the outside streams and there's some things that we need to do to make it look and work right.
Right, so you've just taken the portions that are either the best or what work for you
right,
from
or
a whole
you know
bunch of different sources.
if there's times where our programmers are like, I you know we're not we're going to throw this out, I can do this better, and they do, and that's what we end up using. So it's not, it doesn't have a name, it's not something that we package and sell and license to anybody. It's
right.
it's a hodgepodge of different things that suit our needs.
Now, I'm sure there's plenty of other questions for graphics, but the big one that seemed to be popular on both the Neowin and the Elder Scrolls forum was, will there be a best setting for my PC button, or aka an automatically configured setting?
That's a good question, and that's one of those late game things that we sort of figure out in the final stages. I think that I saw an email from one of our programmers recently about a setting in the installer where it detects your stuff, but I'm not sure. We had not to this point had something where it sets your settings based on your video card, but I think that may be something that we're looking at. So the answer to your question is I don't know. I think it's something that we're looking at, but I'm not 100% sure, and when I have a definitive answer, we'll let folks know.
All right, great. Pete, can you explain the Radiant AI system?
In 30 words or less?
In whatever words you want to do.
It is a system that we came up with because AI was one of the things from Morrowind that we felt like we wanted to do different and better in Oblivion. So it is a system whereby we do not script individual actions for NPCs, but rather we give them a general set of goals that they figure out how to accomplish on their own based on different parameters that the character may have in terms of its level of responsibility, you know, how much money it has on it in its inventory, things like that. So the difference would be we don't script an NPC at 12 o'clock to go from this location and walk along this specific route and go into this tavern and sit down in this chair. That would be scripting. What we do is we say, you know, every day at 12 o'clock, you go somewhere to eat, figure it out. And, you know, if they've got money and they're a responsible person, then they'll simply find the nearest establishment and choose to go into that establishment, and it will choose whatever empty chair is closest to where it wants to eat, and it'll sit down and eat. So the difference is that we have so many NPCs in the world that trying to script exactly what they need to be doing at any given moment is far too complicated and labor intensive. So the idea was to come up with a system whereby we can have them achieve goals on their own rather than us always having to tell them where to go and what to do. And that was a lot more than 30 words, but that's about the best I can do.
It was worth it, though. That's amazing.
The only reason why I asked was that there have been some rumors spreading like wildfire, I suppose, last month and a half, that you were having major issues with the Radiant AI.
No. I mean, this whole process is, you know, there's always something that you're fixing and trying to tweak, but, you know, there was stuff floating around, oh, the game is delayed because of the Radiant AI. Honestly, I think it's just folks trying to come up with reasons or rationalizations in their own mind why things are the way they are. You know, the game is not done. And when the game is not done, that means all of the game is not done. That means, you know, there's issues in every area and things in one system that affect another system. And so until the entire thing is done, it's not done. But no, Radiant AI was no... there's no issue where it's broken and not working or whatever the rumors were.
That's great then, I think.
Yeah.
We had a list of, I guess, the top few questions that people asked. Number one by far was, they want more information concerning the racial abilities, bonuses, and weaknesses that will be found in the game. So if you could elaborate on that a bit, Pete, for us.
I mean, to go through race by race and sort of list all the different stuff that, you know, folks want to know how it is, what kind of character creator, what kind of bonuses their Khajiit is going to get, or what the benefit is for being a Nord over an Imperial. We may at some point put that stuff up on the website, but to go through for you guys and sort of go character by character and say, you know, this class gets this and this class gets that probably isn't the best use of your time. All I can say is it's not exactly like it was in Morrowind. You know, a lot of that comes through in play testing as people go through and try and figure out to make sure that everything is balanced and that no one race is more powerful than the other. But in terms of, you know, the Nord getting a +5 to armor and a +10 to blade, I mean, there's literally 100 things I'd have to go through and list for you. So I think I'll just have to answer by saying we will make an effort to get that information up for folks if we can before the game comes out. But otherwise, they'll have the fun and enjoyment of figuring it out when they go to create their character.
Right, so they can actually experience it once they have the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second question we have, do NPCs get punished for crimes they commit in the game?
Yeah. So we don't do a lot of stuff. Like, we don't have NPCs just running around the world willy-nilly and stealing stuff, because it tends to make the game look broken when things start disappearing that NPCs steal. Yeah. But, for example, if you're attacked by an NPC, then guards will come to you and try to help and, you know, defend you against whatever it's attacking you.
So for our third question, did you guys change anything in terms of the system of leveling that you're using, leveling up, compared to Morrowind, using multipliers, etc.?
No, it works about the same way. I mean, we sort of revamped some things in terms of the number of skills and how they relate to each attribute, so that you've got 8 attributes, one of which is luck, which doesn't govern anything specifically, but just sort of affects everything generally. But each attribute governs 3 individual skills, and the more you use those skills, the quicker they'll improve. And based on which skills you use, every time you level up, each attribute will get a modifier or not based on how much you've been using the skills that it governs. And if you play the game for a while and you don't level up and you basically accrue sort of 2 or 3 levels and you go to level up, then each skill use is tracked during the level in which you achieved it. So if you, let's say you advance enough to level up 3 times, when you go to sleep, the first time you go to improve your level from 2 to 3, you'll get all the bonus modifiers for the skills that improved from 2 to 3. And then when you go, you know, it'll give you another message to level up again from 3 to 4, you get a different set of modifiers based on the skills you use between level 3 and level 4. So we track, as you achieve enough skill increases to level up, we track your skill uses so that your modifiers are always appropriate. But it basically works about the same way as Morrowind.
Right. Okay, next question we got is about pets and pets in the game. Supposedly the E3, one of the E3 videos you guys released had a woman with a pet.
Right.
Can you give us some info on them? Can you name them? Do they follow you around? Can you heal them?
There are NPCs in the world who have pets. A pet is not technically something you can have, although you may find that there may be an animal, one or more animals in the game that will follow you, but you don't own them. They're not.
Don't necessarily have dominion.
Exactly.
Over
them, right? So it may feel like a pet, but it is not a pet. It is not a pet in the truest sense.
How were the decisions made to eliminate spears and combine blade skills from the game? Was this a cause or effect relating to the game's character creation system, or was it something else?
I mean, everything that we do. I mean, when you look at something like a spear, or another example would be bows. I mean, it's a two-pronged thing. When we look at skills in general, we look at the scope of what it is we want the player to be able to do, and to try as best we can to have those things be fairly equal from one to the next, so that there isn't one skill like destruction where you can smoke the meat off of things at, you know, at 50 paces and do these great terrible spells, and then you've got another skill that is poking somebody with a sharp stick. So we, first of all, it's, you know, are all of the skills leveled? So when we combine blades, we felt like having all of those be under one body allowed you to not have to waste multiple skills on having different kinds of swords, a short sword versus a claymore or whatever. Certainly everybody's always going to have opinions on, on what should or should not be included underneath one skill. But, you know, the idea is we're trying to make decisions that are best from the game in terms of creating a character and then also the kinds of things that we want you to be able to do in the game. And ultimately, you can't include everything, right? You always got to draw a line in the sand and say, these are the features we're going to support. These are the weapons we want to have. And something always gets left out that somebody really wanted. But ultimately...
But eventually, that's right. You guys have to make the decision.
Yeah, I mean,
at some point,
you can't just develop forever. You got to bring this thing home to completion. And the more things you try and include, the less time you get to spend on each of those individual things. So, you know, our philosophy is to pick the set of stuff, whether it's the number of types of armor, the different types of weapons, or what materials we're going to have in the world, or how many skills there are. It's an effort to make sure that the game is balanced and feels right, and that everything in the game has had the appropriate level of polish to it. And we could go off forever into, you know, what things are or are not included. But, you know, at some point we draw a line in terms of what we feel comfortable with, and that's what we go with.
Back to NPCs for a sec. Someone asks here, will you be able to make friends with NPCs in a more advanced way than they could in Morrowind? And will you be able to establish some sort of permanent relationship with them?
I think that's probably a question leading to things like marriage and relationships.
Right.
Which we do not do.
It's
just, we tend not to focus, as my good friend Gavin Carter says, we tend not to focus on the domestic. You can play other games and focus on the domestic. We tend to focus on the heroic. So we don't concern ourselves as much with, do you have a wife to come home to, as much as, do you like to kill things in very cool ways and be a hero? So we tend to focus
on
that.
It's a good trade-off,
yeah.
Yes.
It's one that
yeah,
we're willing
kill
to make.
Things too, yeah.
Yeah. Will it be possible to load or create custom faces or textures from a photo image during or prior to with a remote utility, character creation in TS4 Oblivion, like FaceGen Photo Fit?
That's not something we're planning on supporting. I'm fairly certain that, like before, you can't use on the PC, you cannot use the construction set to change what your character has or does or looks like. So you may be able to use some various tools to change what other NPCs look like that you may decide to create and drop into the world, but it is not something... the simple answer is it's not something we're planning to officially support or do. We have a wonderful character creation system with a bazillion different sliders and ways to customize the way your character looks, and so I think folks will enjoy that and getting to create what their character looks like using that.
Yeah, so you guys are confident that'll provide enough customization.
Yeah. We had stuff like we had the XO5 event in Europe where we had guys who spent an hour, literally 60 minutes, doing nothing but playing with the sliders in character gen, with like crowds of people standing around them watching them as they tweaked every single thing about their character's face. So there is a ton of stuff there that you can do if you're into what your character looks like enough. You can tweak it to your heart's content.
Now, in that same line of thought there, is it going to be possible to change the type of character you have, like skills, class, etc., once you've chosen and played the character, like, to the level limit or whatever?
Well, so the way it works is there are three different stages of character creation. There's picking your race and what you look like, there's picking your birth sign, and then there's picking your class, whether it's one of our... you know, sort of pre-rolled classes or creating your own custom classes. So you make those choices at different points during character gen, and then you reach a point where you're about to leave the world, and we say, okay, do you want to change any choices you've made up to this point? And at that stage, you can go back and change the way you look. You can change what class you're playing, what race, what birth sign, and you can actually go back into a portion of the dungeon you've played through and try it with anything you've changed. If you tried decide you want to play a different class, for example, you can go back through and play with that new character for a little bit to see if that's what you want to do. But no, once you leave that door, then that's it. That is who you are, and that's how you're going to play the game going forward. However, the cool thing is that you have all of the skills in the game, so it's not like you're choosing to have some skills and not have others. You're just choosing what levels those skills start at and whether or not they help you level up. So if you don't choose alchemy as a major skill, you can still become the best alchemist ever and do all kinds of great stuff with alchemy. It's just not going to help you level up, but you can still do it and be really good at it. So we don't lock you off from any part of the game. We just determine, or rather, we let you determine what things are going to help you level up.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. It's an interesting approach if you think about it, too. Like, a lot of the games now, even the online ones like Guild Wars, you lock into two character sets, and those are your sets for the game, so it's good that you'll have access to everything. Question here about plugins. Someone writes here, we have read that Horse Armor and Holidays will be among the first official plugins available for purchase. Can you tell us if more official plugins are already known at this time, and are you allowed to tell us what they will be?
Yes, I can tell you that there will be more, and no, I cannot tell you what they are. it's one of those things there are things that we want to do or think we want to do until we do them and don't like them and decide not to do them and do something else. So we'll let folks know sort of what we're up to and what we're working on once we're confident that we're going to do them. So Horse Armor is definitely one you can expect, and we've got three or four others that are in the works. But again, until they pass the test of being worthy for release, we'd prefer not to comment on them, because if we decide not to do them, somebody's always going to be upset.
Right. Another quick question here concerning, I guess, plugins and the whole system around Xbox and Xbox Live and being able to update the game.
Mm-hmm.
Adding things to it. Can you touch on that, and how's that going to work?
We support the standard conventions that Xbox 360 supports in terms of downloadable content and title updates and all of that stuff. Whatever it is that games are allowed to do through 360, we have those same avenues available to us, and I would imagine that wherever possible, we will take advantage of them. And then whatever we do on one platform, we'll do on the other. So any downloadable content we make available on one, we'll make available on both. We tend not to play favorites as much as possible, try and be sort of to do things that are not platform specific.
Well, we're pretty much there's a ton of other little questions we can ask, but I'd like to do a couple of I feel important questions from a few friends of mine, specifically for expansions. I'm sure you guys are probably in the beginning stages of discussions, but do you have any plans for releasing them through digital-only ways, such as Steam or EA's downloader service? Are they going to be available in retail as well?
I don't know. Our philosophy is always that we're not going to talk about what we're going to do after the game comes out until the game comes out, because if you lose focus and don't make the original game really good, nobody's going to care whether or not an expansion is available and how it's available, because you blew your chance on the first one. So our philosophy is always that we don't talk about what we might be doing next until we do the first one right. So we'll touch on expansions and how we might make them available once we get the game out.
Right. That makes sense. Now, this is a question that I think is on a lot of PC gamers' minds. What do you personally, not Bethesda, but you personally, think about Star Force Protection? What kind of shortcomings do you think it has? And do you support, and does Bethesda support, the sort of anti-piracy measures that companies are now deploying these days?
I would prefer not to comment on anybody specifically, other than to say that we are not using Star Force for Oblivion or any of our other products right now. In terms of the anti-piracy, it's a big problem for us. It goes against what we do for a living and how we make money. We have a lot of people here that we employ who count on us to pay their salaries when payday comes around. So, it's obviously in our best interest to protect what it is that we develop and create and not have it just freely distributed by anybody who feels like passing it around for free. But beyond that, it would be inappropriate for me to comment on specific utilities for doing that and so forth, other than to make sure folks know we aren't using Star Force for Oblivion, and that's about all.
Well, that's fine. That's a good answer. This one I think is a good one. So could you explain further how vampires will work in the game, and specifically how raiding AI vampires are going to act? Like, will they feed on other people or vampires, that sort of thing?
You know what? That is a good question, but it's not something that we really have disclosed. I'm not sure how much we're planning on talking about how it works before the game comes out, but it's not something that we are ready just yet to talk about. There is very little about this game that isn't known on some level, and Vampires is one of those things that we just kind of we like the fact that folks aren't quite sure how it works or what it does to let them experience something and not have it be spoiled too much beforehand. So we may talk about it between now and release, but for now we're going to stay silent on it.
Okay. Let's see. What else?
You know, it's a good question, Todd, when the answer is no comment. So
Right.
that's a really good question.
The in-game cinematics, are they going to be CGI, or are they going to be the in-the-game engine?
No, everything that we do, any cutscene video we do is all in-game. We don't do CGI. It's all
Great,
in-game.
great. Now, could you tell anything about the dragons that are going to be in the game, or is that one of those no comment deals?
There are no dragons in the game.
There's no dragons.
No dragons.
Okay, well, whoever made that question up probably read something else from another game.
Or there was that's just a wishful thinking question.
Perhaps so, yeah. Now, will the PC and Xbox 360 versions be released at the same time?
Yes.
What
Yes, we're
about
planning
US and
simultaneous.
Europe? Will they be released
We
at the same time
we
also?
plan to release simultaneously across platform and across continents.
Wow,
So
great.
we
Awesome
plan to
answer.
release same day everywhere we can.
I think everyone would love to know what's the current status of Fallout 3? Do you have a team specifically working on it? What's the current forward motion on it? Anything you could tell us, really.
All I can tell you is that it is under development, and we're not talking about what we're up to, and when we're ready, we'll let folks know. Our philosophy on discussing, you know, if it had been our choice, we wouldn't have probably have said anything about it when it was announced back then. That wasn't really an announcement of the game like we did for Oblivion, where we said, "Hey, we're making this game. Here it is. Here's what it looks like." That was really just an announcement that we had gotten a license. So we like to sort of hold off on talking about our stuff and announcing it formally until we've got a bit to talk about and to show. Talking about something when it's in its early stages is not really prudent because things are still being figured out and worked on, and so we like to wait until we've got, you know, screenshots to show and this is how this works and that sort of thing. So
And so
it'll
the rumor mills don't go wild and
Yeah, well, just, you know, and like, you know, people don't start asking you about questions where you're like, yeah, well, you know, we're still discussing how this is going to work or how that's going to work, or, you know, well, can we see how this looks, or, you know, we just like to get all of our ducks in a row and have, you know, a good amount of information and have a game at a certain point before we start talking about it. So it'll be a while until we're there, and once we're there, we will definitely let everybody know.
But I
But I
think
guess you guys can say that Fallout 3, you guys are really excited about
Oh
it and
yeah.
what it's going to bring in.
Yeah, I mean we're you know, there's a lot of folks here, myself included, who are big fans of Fallout. I have
Myself too, yeah.
I recently started going back through and playing it again just to refamiliarize myself because it had been, you know, however many years since I had played the original. And so yeah, you know, we got a lot of guys here who are big fans, and the folks on the team who are working on it, some really good ideas, and so yeah, once it's time, we're looking forward to letting folks know what we're up to.
Okay, my favorite part here.
Mine also.
How does Bethesda feel about acquiring the license rights to all Star Trek games for every electronic platform? And what can we expect from you guys in this regard in the future?
How do we feel? I think it's pretty cool. It's a license that has not been used to its full potential prior to previous to the to now. There have been a lot of Star Trek games, some good, some not so good, but we don't feel like
Yeah,
anybody ever
we've
really.
both played every single Star Trek game in
Oh,
existence, so we're
you
really
guys are
excited
ahead
about
of me. I've played quite a
it.
few of them, but I definitely can't say that I've played them all. You know, for openers, for the first two titles we're working on, you know, I'm personally excited about Legacy and Quicksilver. I think, you know, we've got some guys that have some experience working with this franchise and with this property who are themselves very big fans of Star Trek the series, and know what goes into making a good Star Trek game, and I think the things that they're working on in Legacy and Tactical Assault are going to be a lot of fun. And you know, we're excited to start there and then move forward and see where we go from there.
Yeah, that has to be the hardest thing, though, working with Star Trek, because you already have such a massive following of the whole genre, and there's certain history and conventions that you have to stick to when you're developing a game of that type.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, not just, you know, obviously from a licensing standpoint, you know, you've got the folks at CBS Paramount who have a vested interest in making sure we don't trample on what makes Star Trek Star Trek, and then you have the fans who have, you know, their own expectations and beliefs on what's good and what's bad and what it needs to be. So we have a lot of folks that we need to make sure are happy with what we're doing. But at the same time, the folks at Mad Dog and Quicksilver and Bethesda, we're all very hard on ourselves in terms of expectations and the bars that we need to hit. So I feel like that we are good enough critics of ourselves and what it is we do that we will hit our marks in terms of what these games need to be.
Well, I think from a personal standpoint, the fact that Bethesda got the rights to Star Trek games is huge, because not that I'm saying Activision did a specifically bad job with the license, but like you said, some of the games were good, some of the games were bad. But, you know, Bethesda isn't known for making bad games. They're you know, you got Morrowind. I mean, it's like one of the best PC games ever made. I mean, just the fact that you guys are going to be developing Star Trek games with Mad Dog and Quicksilver there, that's just, for a Trekkie, it's like a dream come true, I think, for you guys to be developing games.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We hope that we will earn that trust by doing some games that people really enjoy.
And I think the same goes for Fallout 3, of course. I mean, you guys are you're a AAA company. I think most people would agree. You guys like one of the best PC companies out there. So, what else could you say? You know.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate you guys' interest and all the folks that have supported us and all the interest out there. And just know that we are literally doing everything humanly possible to make the game as good as possible and to get it done and in everybody's hands as soon as we can.
Right.
Now, the final question is a big one. Now, I do have to tell you, I did read in several posts now in the Elder Scrolls forums that you, yourself, not anyone else, but Pete Hines, confirmed a release date in an interview either yesterday or today that was released by Computer and Video Games, I believe, that was March 24th. And everyone's been saying March for, like, last few months. Mm-hmm. Can you confirm that, or not confirm that, or do you have a release date?
I can 100% confirm that I've never told anybody a release date other than early 2006.
Okay.
And anybody who says otherwise is not telling the truth. We have said all along it will be early this year, and that we will give out the exact date when we are 100% sure that we will make it. That we do not want to put a date out there like, for example, January 10th, and then not have the game come out until January 12th. We don't even want to miss it by a day or two, because folks have waited long enough, and we don't want to disappoint anybody by missing anymore. So we have a date in mind. We haven't released it yet, and we aren't going to comment on all the other dates put out by various and sundry other sites. So it is early 2006 until you see an official release from me that says otherwise.
Great.
And released simultaneously for PC, Xbox 360, and
in the US, the Europe,
world.
And
yeah.
Like
yeah.
Everywhere.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Both platforms, US and or North America and Europe.
Now, actually, one little extra thing. Are you actually planning on porting this to PS3 by any chance?
We're a PC and Xbox 360 title for early this year. That's what our focus is. That's what the game is going to be available for. If
right.
Down the road we to do it for something else, that's a decision that would be made later.
Alrighty.
Right.
That's just to clear something up, because some people came up to me and asked me about the PS3 possibilities and stuff. So
we are not a PS3 game right now.
Okay.
So with that, we'd really like to thank you, Pete, for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule, we understand, for talking to us, talking to the Power User TV guys and Neowin and all your fans on the forum. So from me personally too, thank you very much. And Todd?
Well, hey, yeah, I've been talking to Pete in email for
about a month straight now, and we were trying to do this a couple weeks ago, but my internet was down, so yeah, I have to say thank you very much. And I certainly hope down the road we could do another interview either about Elder Scrolls when it's released, or maybe Fallout 3 or Star Trek games. That'd be great.
Sure, absolutely. Thank
Good
you
stuff.
For your guests.
Yeah, so thanks very much, Pete. And that'll end this segment of the Power User TV Neocast.
Thank you for tuning in to Neocast. This has been a presentation of NeoWin.net.
In NY, Hondo, EKNY, Miami, D.C., Preferred, Rebecca, Paul, Billy, Ho, Dow, and Mokino, every...